Welcome to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld podcast, where we try to figure out if it would be possible to run Westworld as an actual business. This exercise will cover the entire show, so be aware, spoilers will follow. Also, this is a discussion about running Westworld as a functioning business. It is not a criticism of the story itself, as we do understand there's dramatic license at work here. Please don't send us any hate mail.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld. With me today is Tamara, Joe Carlin, Chris Nelson, our still special guest, Paul Cernatinger, and me, Pat Swanson. Today we're going to be talking about the ethics and impact of operating a host slave labor-based business.
I don't think it's slave labor because you don't have to pay them.
We're starting off with a bang. Wow.
I'm reasonably sure that not paying them is almost a precondition of them being slaves.
But yeah,
since we're talking about business things, I'm cutting you off. No, you're done. Since we're talking about business, let's kick this over to our resident business person, Tom, to introduce us.
I don't know that's so much a business thing, more of an ethics thing, right? Especially when we're talking about slave labor.
And as we all know, business and ethics are mutually exclusive.
Benefits.
This has devolved quickly.
Only if Zenefits is still in business by the time this airs.
Let me take an Uber over to their office.
Oh, my God. I seriously don't know where you want me to go with this. We've made this comment a few times on the show. Should we be treating these hosts as employees? I think during some of the HR stuff that we were talking about, should there be some sort of department for host resources rather than employee resources? But at the same time, we've made lots of comments about, well, they're hosts, they're just robots, they're not people. They should be just doing what we tell them and nothing more, not questioning anything, right? We just spent two episodes on the laws to kind of define what they should and should not be doing. It's kind of open to everybody's interpretation as to what we call these hosts.
I think Walt Disney probably never asked himself if he had to pay the robots that the Imagineers have come up with. And it's not because, not that Walt Disney is like a shining example of a human being, but it's not because he was trying to stiff the robots. It's because they're built to be entertainment facilities. They're not built to be representations of life or consciousness. And I think that's where the danger comes in, is that, like, if you set out to reproduce consciousness and you're successful, then you have opened yourself up and your business up to these sorts of considerations. But I'm not sure, like, with the direction that we've decided that, like, we think it should go, that we're subject to those same issues.
I think another part of that is because these robots are humanoids, and they are, you can't distinguish a host from a guest just by looking at them. And so that adds to a lot of people saying, you should treat them. Robots have rights too. No, they don't.
I never thought I was going to say this, but I agree with Joe.
Fuck yeah.
Probably not for the reason he's hoping. I think that we've established previously that the direction that we would take this in some of the decisions that we made would eliminate the concept of a consciousness and free will that probably sparks this whole question. I mean, we see in the show, as the hosts are designed, that they clearly have some sort of ability to think for themselves and make these decisions. And in that kind of scenario, then sure, that becomes a valid question. I think that the approach that we're talking about utilizing is much more cutting all of that out.
So I agree with that. And so since I agree with you and you agree with Joe, I also feel dirty. but let's talk about the show as it is. I think that if we were to move the hosts to be closer to animatronics, then, well, I think we can agree that they are closer to people than animatronics right now. They appear to have wants. They appear to choose some of their own actions. It's fairly muddy as the show shows it to us, and that's why I think that's where I think we should focus in this episode. Because yeah, if you strip all of that out, well, no, there's not a problem. It's we're back to Walt Disney's, well, machines that clearly don't have minds of their own.
I think the distinction here, though, is that like, and I think you said it well. I'm going to steal your words. They appear to make decisions, right? They appear to have wants and needs and desires. And like, I think that should be the goal, not that like they actually, we've built a system where they actually have wants and needs and desires and actually make decisions. And that's why it appears that way. It should be a system that tricks you into this. I mean, like, it should be like highfalutin, like, you know, magic, essentially. Like, we should be magicians that are like pulling the wool over people's eyes and making them believe that this is happening.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, if you actually, let's imagine that you could actually make them people, you'd have real problems ethically with what you're doing there. If you replaced all the hosts with human beings and did what they did to them, oh my God, this would be an awful place. You would hope the government would smash this place. It would be awful.
How much does it pay?
The smashing or the other part?
Sure.
Jeez. Okay, so I want to talk about something, though, that you touched on, Paul, and it's you want to make them appear like they're making decisions, appear like they're people, but not actually have them be people. And I think even that can lead to some danger for your company, because if you can't prove that they're not people, you're going to get people inside and outside of your company that interact with them that conclude that, because they look and act like people, maybe they are people.
We talked either an episode or two episodes ago about being able to introspect the decision-making process, which is a thing that we don't have in the real world for machine learning and that they don't have for hosts in Westworld. And this would be a great example of where that would greatly benefit the business. Somebody comes in a legal context and they're like, hey, we think this is ambiguous, and you can point to your program and be like, no, here's all the inputs that happened, here's the sequence of decisions that made, and here's why ultimately the host did the thing that they did. And if you can point to that, I think that takes a lot of wind out of the sails of the arguments against you.
I agree.
So I think an interesting place to kind of take this would be, I think some of the employees, and we see this in the show, sometimes get confused on the fact that these are actually just robots. The hosts are just robots. They're not real people, right? We see a few times where I think Ford has to kind of tell a body tech or somebody, you know, you don't need to cover that person up because that's not a real person. That's a host. I think he goes as far as actually like taking a scalpel and like cutting them and like, see, nothing happens. So not only do we have to, you know, worry about like the consciousness part that we've talked about, and it sounds like we're kind of dismissing a lot of that, but what about the consciousness of the employees that we have working with these hosts day in and day out? You know, what do they think about what we're doing essentially to these robots that look like humans that they work with day in and day out?
So this is turn from the moral quandary of like the rights of a worker that is potentially conscious but not necessarily human to the actual impact on the humans on the periphery of these systems, whether they're conscious or not.
I
think it's totally worth talking about. I just thought it was an interesting shift.
Well, just think about the who else interacts with a host that, you know, could, that we should kind of be worried about, right? Obviously the guests, hopefully the hosts don't get out of the park, so we don't have to worry about people outside of the park. But I mean, all of these people, hosts are getting shot in the park, right? And you've got people in the park experiencing this. Are they going to go through some sort of like internal, I guess, trauma or something about like, you know, seeing that firsthand? Because, you know, unless we think that they're in some sort of apocalyptic world, you know, in the future, someone getting shot and being killed right in front of you doesn't happen every day. Well, maybe if you're in Chicago, but that's a different issue.
That doesn't happen in Indiana all the time. Gotta say.
That's fair.
Does anything happen in Indiana?
That's even fairer.
Well, yeah, sometimes they go to the south side of Chicago to see a shooting.
Please cut all this. going back to what you were saying there about the trauma on the text, I did a little bit of cursory research looking for a real world example, and I found a study, and we'll link it, that shows that veterinarians have problems with depression, higher depression and suicide rates than the average population. Now, I think I'm of course guessing here because they don't go into all of the reasons, but I'm assuming that it has to do with, empathizing with these animals and getting attached and, you know, dealing with all of the difficulties there that, now those animals aren't people. But it's easy to see how people could become attached to those animals in the same way that I could see body types becoming attached to hosts that look like human beings and have personalities and families and are hurt and suffer. I mean, if the man in black is to be believed, the things that are done to Dolores all of the time are truly horrific. And mm-hmm. I could see how having to treat that and, you know, knowing that she gets dragged screaming into that barn and that's a regular occurrence, that could have some negative repercussions, even if she isn't a person.
I don't have anything super insightful to say, but it sounds like what we're talking about here is potentially the employees getting PTSD.
True. And so at that point, it's probably important to make sure that we have some sort of effective and available mental health options for the employees, making sure that there's some sort of psychological evaluations regularly done to ensure that this is not negatively impacting them. And if it is, rather than just saying, you know, okay, you're clearly no longer qualified to hold this job, making sure that they get whatever help and assistance they need so that they can move forward.
I mean, you might need it for the guests as well.
Maybe, yeah. They don't have anybody on staff, like thinking back to the org chart. Nada.
We know they at least need it for some of the, system failures that we see. I think one of the hoodlums that normally raids Dolores' house, he goes awry. He's been shot like 5 times and is in the bar and is drinking milk and it's pouring out of the bullet holes in him and he's towering over this like huddled couple who are clearly guests. They're terrified. They're going to remember this day for the rest of their lives. And we see the strength that hosts have when they're not limited. I mean, Dolores just breaks the man in black's arm easily. You have a reason to be afraid. This thing's broken, and it's killing everyone around it. I mean, Jesus. They're not coming back to the park. You've at least got some lost repeat business here.
Yeah, I would want to get them into like a therapy session and get some sort of settlement in their hands before they hit social media. I mean, that sounds really like crude and kind of like a joke, but like that's a business ending thing. Like, yeah, we went to this park, it was supposed to be great, and oh my god, you know, like it was like a Daffy Duck cartoon. He's got milk coming out of his bullet holes and I thought I was going to die. Don't go there. It's like the end of your business.
No, it sounds like you're just marketing to a new set of people. Some people want to see that.
You're not marketing on Breitbart.
So we saw that a family took their young kid to this place, and that event happened in Sweetwater, which is supposed to be the safest part of the park. All you need is one of those things happening with a child there, and this problem gets an order of magnitude worse.
Well, the attention gets an order of magnitude.
Yeah, the attention, the harm to the business, it's going to be ugly. Uglier.
That settlement amount goes way up, by the way. That kid's going to need a lot more therapy than his parents.
I mean, at least we don't have to worry about someone recording that event with their cell phone and then broadcasting it on social media in order to show everyone how bad the situation was.
Are you talking about Chicago again?
So I'm not entirely certain that we don't have to worry about that. Going back to the employees and their trauma, if you have someone who seriously starts to empathize with these hosts, you might have someone who takes the internal recordings and publicizes them. you may have to be worried about people who think that what you're running here is a horror and that they take action to try to stop it.
Fair enough. That goes back to if we're making sure that we have adequate support and care for the employees, that should be less of an issue. Two, your security protocols that you have in place should prevent any of that from happening. I was more referencing, you know, cell phone footage than anything else. But we definitely should not, and we should be screening for that. If we look like we're going to have somebody who reaches a point and says, well, the hosts are people and we need to save the hosts and we need to weed those people out. If they're suffering from some sort of PTSD from, you know, overly empathizing with the plight of the hosts and, you know, anthropomorphizing them. Oh my God, tongue tied.
Thinking of them as people.
You know, if we have to accept the fact that not everyone will be as calculating as Joe. Some people will feel anything.
I don't know what that's like.
And we're going to have to address that. That's fair. The other policies that we have in place should still protect the company from somebody going rogue and deciding that they need to reveal everything to the world.
I mean, if you end up in a situation like that, this sounds kind of like a whistleblower situation. So, you know, make sure that, like, the chain of command and when people, like, raise issues, like, they get heard and that changes actually happen. That's going to be your number one defense there, is, like, actually doing, like, you know, proper business practices.
Right. If we have a reliable HR department so that when people have complaints like this, they can fly them up the chain, we should be in better shape here.
So I think we've talked a decent amount about, you know, difficulties with employees and also with guests. But a third group that we'd had on our list was, what about public opinion, protests, that kind of thing?
We don't care what poor people think.
And you got to be pretty damn rich to get into Westworld, so.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds extremely dismissive. But one of the things that we're taking into account here is your overall public opinion probably isn't your biggest concern for a company like this, right? You're looking at a very small overall user base, and your clientele that you're appealing to are probably going to be who you're going to give precedence to on all of your opinions. It's not like, let me try and find a real world example here. It's not like where you have a service such as, say, Uber, right? Where they do something that a whole lot of people don't agree with, and then you end up with that whole delete Uber thing. Unless you manage to upset a significantly large amount of your core base of rich people that already understand, like, how the park works and already are about everything that's going on there, I don't see how you end up in the same situation. You don't have that big of a net that you're casting in terms of the people you're bringing to the park in the first place.
That may in and of itself actually be the problem. I mean, think about, like, the Occupy Wall Street protests. They weren't protesting, you know, for stuff that they were allowed to have. I mean, and if we're talking about the 1%, that's your TAM for Westworld.
Your TAM?
Total addressable market.
But I think we're making an assumption here. At the end of the day, we have to remember that we make these things, right? They're, like Joe always says, they're not people, they're machinery, they're robots. I think if people are getting outraged by what we're doing to them, that means that the public opinion of what a robot is has also changed, right? I think if we were running this type of business in today's world, most people would take the attitude that I just had and that Joe obviously has. They're a piece of machinery, right? We don't get teary-eyed when a robot on the assembly line breaks down. We put in a new robot. So I think it's a fair question. Maybe in this point in the future, public opinion has changed about what is a robot, what is a person. But in this day and age, at least today, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Well, we're hand-waving away an awful lot of time between then and now. And I'm assuming, maybe unfairly, that there's been considerable progress in the field of AI between now and then in this hypothetical universe. I don't think it's that hard to believe that you can cross a line in how like a human a piece of software can be, where you would get people believing that even though in a court of law you might be able to prove that the software isn't conscious, that you'd still get a considerable number of people thinking, well, I mean, I had a conversation with that software that was just as real as what I've had with people I know that are human. I would expect the advance of technology to really muddy this water.
Great. So we unfortunately end up with what, like Peter, people for the ethical treatment of robots? That's exactly.
did you just make that up?
Yeah. Wow, that's great.
That was phenomenal.
I imagine they would be as insufferable to deal with as PETA is, so I can't imagine that that means anything bright for the future.
Don't harm robots.
I think we'll be fine as long as robots aren't cute and fuzzy. I mean, nobody protests for the millions of mayflies that are dissected every year in the name of science, but, you know, I'm not going to, I'm very pro-animal rights, but, I try to be very pragmatic about this. If it's, I don't buy your zeal if it's only for cute shit.
That's fair enough. I feel like now I also have to state that I am also not for mistreatment of animals in any way, shape, or form, just to clarify that.
But a robot animal, if not conscious, you would kick all day.
Yeah. I mean, that probably says something else about your mental state, but I'm not going to get up in arms about it. If you want to beat the crap out of, go outside, kick your car 30 times. I don't give a shit. It's the same thing, right? It's if you're going to mistreat a piece of machinery, it's still a piece of machinery at the end of the day.
It says more about you than the machine.
Exactly. And, I don't know that we need to worry about that as much. Now, if we do end up with something like, I'm just going to keep saying Peter now. Thanks. If we do end up with something like that, is that something that we need to be concerned about?
And I think that walks into the last of the issues fairly well. Let's say for the rest of this conversation, hypothetically, that AI has improved, over those 30 years from the start to the present day in Westworld, that the average person has more interaction with them. They are more human-like than ever. Sure, we've got a high watermark at Westworld that's much better than the state of the art everywhere else. But I think it's entirely believable that you could end up in a place where we start to see Peter being a group and it gaining traction. The more widespread human-like AIs that at least say they have, wants and needs and aspirations, you ought to expect that group to matter. What we have here is there's a potential impact to your business, the business of Westworld, if you ever got a legal definition change of what it is to be a person. I mean, right now, to be a Homo sapiens, to be one.
Or
but,
a corporation. Ironically, Westworld is probably a person.
Corporations are people.
That's funny. You just give Westworld a host AI, and then we're there.
Oh, boy.
But if that is the trend that the public is taking, as AI gets more common, people empathize with it more and think and feel that it is more likely to be a person than not, you've got a problem as a business.
Do we? I understand that's an entirely dismissive comment, but so to put it in the same frame of reference, I guess, how many companies has PETA gone up against and said that they disapprove of their practices that have ended up going under because of it?
So I'm not going to give a number to that because I don't think it's a very high number, if at all. But I will say that PETA congratulated themselves recently for the closing of Barnum & Bailey Ringling Brothers Circus, who closed as a result of dwindling ticket sales because entertainment, attention span is going online. So PETA was very proud of themselves for not solving that problem.
I want to talk about, and this is going to be a charged issue, so if Joe could not speak, that would be great.
That should just be a general rule.
I'm
really.
I mean, no one can see him flicking me off on the podcast, but you should know that it's there. So there is a PETA aside, you know, as a organization that has not been successful, I think we can consider another movement that has some parallels. It's entirely possible that, say, 4 years from the present day for Westworld, there's a legal change to the definition of what a person is that includes hosts. We don't know anything about the outside world, so it's possible. It's also possible. It's very far away. But going to the past, there were plantations in the South in the Civil War. Let's go to right. I know you don't want to talk about this, but we're going to do it anyway. Let's go to 1861 in the South, and there were many businesses built on the back of slave labor, and they did not consider those slaves equals. They did not consider them people, and they had justifications, you know, bullshit justifications, but they had them. If you were to ask those people why, none of them would tell you that they were doing it to equals. They didn't know in 1861 that it would all be over 4 years later. But it wasn't a good time to be a plantation owner in 1865. I'm not bemoaning the plight of the poor, rich plantation owner. Fuck 'em. But it's not a good time to go into the plantation business in the South in 1861. And if you're a business person, if you're not going to consider ethics at all, you should at least consider, well, the other part of a business.
And, God, congratulations on finding a topic I didn't want to touch with a 10-foot pole, by the way.
You couldn't have got that from the title of the episode?
Yeah, you act like I pay attention when I'm seeing this stuff for the first time.
The title sounded great. Pat's just like, hey, I'll bring this racially charged huge issue that nobody wants to talk about. Jerk.
Yeah. So I can understand the parallel that you're trying to draw. However, I don't want to accept it as a valid parallel.
Because
I think that we are dealing with distinct entities here, regardless of what misguided cultural views we had on how we treat other members of the human race were at various points in human history. It's still very different than the treatment of a separate non-biological being. I mean, we're crossing some notable boundaries here. We're not even crossing into the differentiation between how we treat humans and how we treat animals. We're going into how we treat humans versus how we treat objects. I don't want to try and make the correlation between something that is basically an intelligent version of my car against, you know, horrible stuff that's happened in human history.
I hear what you're saying, and man, if we end up getting hate mail for one of these episodes, it's sure going to be this one. I don't mean to say that everything here is the same. It's not a perfect parallel. What I am trying to say is that if we're talking about the impact on a business, there's a potential sea change here with the hosts, and a way that it could happen. And there was a big sea change in the past. If we're looking for examples that are similar, maybe this isn't a good one, but it might also be the best one we've got.
I might offer up all of the work that, and I'm going to tie this back into animal rights, all the work that Temple Grandin has done to basically make the life of farm animals in industrialized agriculture. Just like raise the quality of life significantly by like understanding, you know, what it actually is to be in that position. I think that might be an equally interesting avenue to explore. Because like essentially you're changing the definition of like not what, like, let's take the example of a cow. You're not changing what a cow is, but you're changing the definition of what the acceptable behavior is between you and the animal. And I think behavior is essentially like that weird thing that we're talking about here, because, like, you know, what's a rock that follows you around, right? Like, one of them is like an inanimate object. The other one, it's not alive, but it's doing things that are life-ish, right? So when you see something that's doing something that, like, you see in yourself, that's when empathy starts to happen, right?
Right.
So the more lifelike we make these things, the better the trick works, the more difficult it's going to be for us as people to, like, separate out the importance of, like, well, it's going to be more difficult to separate, like, whether you treat everything that exhibits a behavior the same way. Like, you're going to have to, like, look at yourself and say, like, why do I do this? What is this actual distinction? And I think for most people, that's actually profoundly terrifying to, like, actually ask yourself why you think or do something or act a certain way. And I think that's why, tying this back in, we didn't treat farm animals, you know, well at all, because it was scary to look at what we did to them and say, like, you know, what does this mean to me? So we just didn't do it. And I think there's certainly darker avenues in our history where we've been guilty of the same thing.
For sure. And that's a really interesting spin to put on it, because I think that that does ask the question of how uncomfortable are people going to be thinking about how they're treating these hosts when you have something that's even more
like us.
Yes. Even though we are talking about machines, it really goes back to how much people are empathizing with it, right? So if someone realizes that they are capable of some profoundly horrifying things that they could do to people were the consequences stripped away, what does that say about one's own human nature?
Yeah, and like when we make these sorts of decisions, like when we're confronted with this stuff, like, it's us that has to change, right? Like, the cow didn't do anything to let us know, hey, maybe we should give it a little more room. The way that we interact with and, like, understand that creature is what changed. And so, like, I guess maybe the point I'm sort of hovering around here is, like, if you wanted to make a successful Westworld, maybe humans aren't ready for that.
By that you mean ethical, right? I mean, it's obviously successful. It's making money.
I think even beyond the ethics, like, maybe we're not as, like, a group ready to, like, ask ourselves the important questions that allow us to even, like, broach those ethics. Like, I think we maybe need to work on ourselves a bit first and get to the point where that's a comfortable conversation. I mean, it won't ever be, like, a totally, like, oh, hey, let's talk about ethics. This is going to be totally easy and, you know, like we'll do it at lunch every day. But, like, we're at a point right now where, like, we opened this by being like, this is the conversation that none of us really want to have. And we're dancing around a lot of issues because it's profoundly uncomfortable. And, like, you know, if we threw robots into the mix, nobody's going to feel more comfortable about it. We're going to feel less comfortable.
It's pretty deep.
But I think spot the fuck on. I think that there's a, like you said, Paul, there are a lot of things that this whole situation with Westworld itself requires someone to be able to introspectively. We've talked about the machines being able to introspectively look into what's happening, right? In terms of how the processes were utilized. We need to be able to do the same as the people running everything in terms of how do we feel and why are we taking the decisions that we're making based on, you know, what the circumstances may be. What does it say about our guests as people that they want to come to a park where they have free rein to do all manner of horrifying things to someone without repercussions? What does it say that people want to come act out their deepest, darkest desires? Like, are we making things worse for humanity by making such a playground available?
I think it's a really hard question to answer, based on the show, for two reasons. First, the show isn't real, and so we're not getting real information about what happens to humanity when you don't have any restrictions. And second, we're getting shown pretty much only the worst things. I think it's entirely possible that a person could go there thinking that they, you know, they do want to do all of these horrible things, and then they do, some of them, and are horrified by it. I mean, it's one thing to say you're going to go somewhere and stab a host, say, and rob a bank. But when you do it and you get close and this thing that looks like a person is bleeding all over you and screaming and, I mean, I don't know how realistic their dying is, but I imagine it's as appalling as all of the rest of it. You could easily have people go the other way and discover that, no, they don't want those kinds of things. I mean, I think it's Steven Pinker, a philosopher who talks about how even as bad as the world is now, it's generally a better time to live than any time before in terms of the likelihood that you're going to have horrible things happen to you. I think that general, he makes the argument in a book, I think the Better Angels of Our Nature, about how this has been a long arc generally, you know, with some noise, that humanity has gone down. And I would say that that might be a slow rejection, but a rejection of that people are making of that kind of awful violence. And what we're seeing is what's left. Because if we all were horrible monsters all the time, we never would have given up that kind of thing in the first place. We'd be hitting each other with sticks and rocks. We never would have gotten to city states, much less, you know, 7 billion people on the planet.
At first, I disagreed with you, thinking that it was going to be the argument about do video games make people more violent? No, video games are just a way to get out that aggression. But after listening to you, I feel differently.
About video games?
Yeah, about video games.
The last thing I want to say here before we wrap up is that regardless of your opinion of whether or not hosts are people or whether they'll be people after we remove a lot of stuff and make them more like animatronics, a lot of the concerns that we've talked about in this episode, that answer really doesn't matter. If they seem like people, we're going to have problems with our staff having difficulty there. We may have to consider the opinion of the rest of the world. We may have to worry about what's going to happen to our business if there are legal changes, even if they aren't people. And so I think there are, we've talked a lot about them, and that a lot of these questions we've asked, it's not just that we don't have the answers to them, it's that nobody does. And that's kind of a difficult thing to face. I think, though, that even though we've talked a lot about the negatives here, that there are positives, that we have been, at least in parts of the world, granting more rights to more groups of people, that there's a spotty trend, but still a trend of humanity wising up to how we treat not just other people, but other life, whatever that life might look like.
To find out more about this podcast and for the show notes of this episode, please go to dollarsandcentsofwestworld.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/dollarsandcentsofwestworld and on Twitter at _DASOW.
Thank you, Debbie Downer, for leading us down this rabbit hole.
Let it die, just like all the people in Westworld.
Hosts, Joe. Hosts.
No, the people were killed by the hosts. As you say that, I close my eyes and all I can picture is like a big steak. It's what I value from life.
I'm glad that you took the last recording seriously and showed up hungover as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad too.
Bag it and tag it.
All right, well, this has been... Joe is literally the worst podcaster in the world. This is Paul, and Chris, and Pat, and Tom, and he who shall not be named. Good night, everyone.